Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Weekden Update, your weekly dose of everything Grizzlies, presented by the Grizzden Podcast and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I'm joined every week by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It's going well. I'm really glad on the holiday weekend that we took the holiday weekend to come out and didn't come out with an episode this morning, so we can be a little happier in your ears. So with the win against the Pistons.
The Grizzlies are 24-50, 13th in the West, 24th in the NBA. They're still 30th on offense and 11th in defense. That has not changed. 26th in net rating. And they are officially 7th from the bottom per Tankathon. They are no longer tied with the Raptors, who have just done an excellent job of just careening down.
There's no subtle tank to them.
No like subtlety. It's
like they went to they were tied with the Wizards, I think, the other week, and they went to a zone, this weird zone defense, and immediately gave up like a 13-0 run and then stayed, like just kept with it. Like, yeah, there's no subtle tank with the Raptors.
Yep. All right. We start every podcast with who's up and who's down. Kraft, I'll pass it to you for your who's up.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this who's up. As most of y'all know, my favorite Grizz player at the moment, is Mark Gasol. Always has been. I love Mark. Everything about him, both his strengths and his flaws, everything makes me happy. And I have to say my who's up is having this documentary and having the Mark Gasol week. Hopefully he, unlike, you know, he usually is, hopefully he's going to be doing a few interviews on shows this week, but I'm very excited about Saturday night's game, where we get to retire his number. And I was really, really pleased. Really who's up is Michael Blevins and the Grind City Media team. Shout out Daniel, who's a listener who also worked on it. But I thought it was a home run documentary. You wouldn't expect from just the team and Grind City Media to have a documentary, I think, this well produced with a lot of good stuff. I mean, it's, you know, I would say it's like ESPN quality documentary. It was really fun. And more than that, maybe it's just because of the way the season's gone and the frustrations. I got emotional a couple times, especially knowing that this April is not going to end the way we thought April was going to end at the beginning of the season, getting to see some of that and all the moments and just, all the early Memphis stuff, just everything about it. I loved. And so that's my who's up. And I think for, I just can't recommend it enough. And we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but to all the Grizzlies fans, and especially if it's been a hard year, it's a frustrating year. You like me many times have, felt the pessimism encroaching your heart. Go and watch this documentary, and it's great. It's well worth your effort. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, free on YouTube, so go watch it. My who's up is Jaren Jackson. He is officially at 65 games, which this season is a bigger deal than other seasons where we would have, assuming we would have been more competitive than we have been this year. But I just think it's worth taking the time to shout him out because of the commitment among so many injuries. How many teammates? We officially passed the 30 player mark. Now we have 31 total players that set the record, which we, of course, on our last week's an update, Kraft went through and named all. At the time, it was only 28, maybe, or 29. Yeah. I can't even remember. But Jaren has been the guy throughout it all that has played. And I hope that the commitment pays off with at least maybe an all-defensive second team nod. And, I don't think he's going to be in the running for much else, per se, but the new 65-game rule that the NBA has implemented for postseason awards is one that, is a little bit controversial, but shout out to Jaren for reaching that mark, 65. My Who's Down also has to do with the Marc Gasol documentary, and my Who's Down is Chris Wallace. It's just astounding to see the difference in how Chris Wallace operated the Grizzlies versus how we operate now currently with Zach Kleiman and his team. The part of the documentary that just absolutely floored me was talking about the Mike Conley potential trade that was on the table. They were going to deal Mike Conley in 2009 for Ramon Sessions and Joe Alexander. And that, of course, would have changed the trajectory of this franchise because neither of those players panned out. And Marc Gasol had to pull aside Ron Tillery, who at the time was the beat writer, and essentially put his thoughts in the press. And, of course, Chris Wallace and Michael Heisley weren't happy about that. And also, honestly, he brought the Grizzlies to Memphis, and so he'll have always that, I guess. But Heisley, too, just not shelling out $500,000 to bring Mark on draft night to Memphis, because that's all it would have taken to get Mark from the Lakers, who drafted him in the second round. And you would have made your superstar, or I shouldn't say superstar, you would have made your all-star proud in Pau Gasol, and you would have brought Mark to Memphis a little bit earlier. Of course, we all know how it happened. Everything happened for a reason, and I'm sure Mark wouldn't have had the edge if he were to be just, underneath Powell's wing that early. But I just thought it was a really bad look for Heisley, who also was a big Hasheem the Beat fan, by the way, and Chris Wallace, because there was just this, the biggest, I guess, the most incriminatory thing in this documentary was how Wallace did not seem to be interested in championships more than he was just relevancy. And I just hated how low the bar was. And so the doc, good on Chris for doing the doc, because this explores a lot of, I'm sure, some of his least favorite moments in Memphis of his career. But overall, this was just, it was tough to watch all these moves back over again and winning despite Chris Wallace.
Yes.
Truly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I'm not going to come up with any new ones. You've got most of my who's downs, which is the record being broken, the record going down of having now 31 players play for us. Heisley, although I'm going to be a little stronger than Heisley, because I was more Heisley down than Chris Wallace down, because they're both terrible in a sense. Obviously, Heisley's, the thing that will always be Heisley is he brought us to Memphis. And that's the amazing thing. But his cheapness as a sports owner is unparalleled. This documentary goes into it a little bit with not wanting to give up $500,000 for Marc Gasol even though Powell wanted him, and various other things. But you know, again, he did bring the Grizzlies to Memphis. I always love him for that. But the fact that like Ron Tillery was on this campaign for several years to get a statue of Mike Eiseley, no, that's not going to happen. He probably wouldn't even have paid for his own statue, honestly. So, you know, Chris Wallace, again, same thing, you know, terrible. His one, you know, defense is one, he had to deal with Michael Heisley, which was difficult. And then two, obviously he did somehow stumble backwards into our beloved core four. You know, it took a lot of things, a lot of effort from a rookie, Mark Gasol in the paper, and all sorts of different things, from honestly, Zach Randolph, just not living up to his potential in other places, to get it. But yeah, I'll just go with that. I mean, like I said, I would have had a lot of who's down about the team this year, coming in. But after we won tonight, it's hard to be two who's down. But I have, you know, I've struggled with a lot of our additions, playing a lot of these 10-day guys. It has been hard. But really that's probably more just me being down, than really them, because they can't help that, you know, that's where they are. They're fringe NBA players. So
while we're talking about the doc, we can just kind of move into our news and notes section of the pod. I it's amazing to me how it felt so nostalgic, and yet Mark only retired 4 years ago. It's also astounding how different the styles are now compared to how they were back then. And I feel like that's part of what makes it nostalgic. And I would say that these days, when you have a lot of players in the media, you're seeing more player involvement in projects like this, to where it's almost just an ad for that player without the honesty. And I thought that this documentary to me was a little bit different, because they did take a more honest approach. They did not shy away from, you know, the way that Mark sometimes was competitive to his detriment in terms of his relationships with teammates, his, you know, the last year or two when we were obviously rebuilding and he wasn't happy with it. And also just the whole Fizdale situation as well was just fascinating to watch back. And it is pretty crazy now in hindsight to see the difference in culture that Fizdale wanted to bring in, and almost came in with a sort of entitlement, regardless of what his roster was, that they were going to play a certain, it was almost as if he was just too, it was too fast. And Mark, though, to his credit, always did represent what I think that we loved about that core four team, which was they found ways to win that were not conventional. It's not what you saw from any other team. And they had an identity that was unlike any other team. And of course, I think Zebo kind of encapsulated it all in a certain way, because he did have that just kind of rough past, but came and was just a redemption story in Memphis, and he was the bruiser. But I do feel that this documentary highlighted how Mark was truly the glue of it all, because without Mark, you don't necessarily have, I feel, the same level of discipline and the way that he, I felt like, carried himself. We were always, he was a winner in every sense of the word. And I think the documentary really illustrated that and brought us back to so many memories. And so I agree with you. It truly is I think probably the best production so far out of Grind City Media. And yeah, shout out to Blevins and everybody else who worked on it, because I know that they have been working on it for a couple years now, ever since they knew that they were going to retire the jersey. And I was glad to, you know, have it see the light of day.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I think another thing that was interesting listening to, because I listened to the kind of the panel discussion, and Michael Blevins, the director, he talked about, I think they did a lot of the interviews. They also talked about Tony Allen too, because there'll be a doc on that, which will probably be a totally different kind of documentary than Gasol. But I think that's where somebody like Chris Wallace, what I appreciate is he could probably be a lot of more positive about the Tony Allen move and other things. And I think he got honesty from a lot of people by asking them about both Mark and Tony So it'll be interesting to see, you know, like it'll be interesting looking in the doc, which interviews were all done in the same like time period. But no, I mean, obviously, I mean, I have a very strong stance on tanking. I think Mark Gasol and I are soul brothers in that. We're of the same spirit that we hate the tank. He hated the tank. I think that the moment we started to tank and we pulled him in a game we were winning in the fourth quarter, I think we lost him then. I mean, I think he was grumpy. You know, he never had the fun mood. I mean, but with that, he, you know, I loved his competitiveness. I loved that he was moody. Yeah, there's fun stories in there about both early stuff, which was fun to hear in his life, but then a lot of the late stuff and him talking with Jaren and you know, trigger warning for Brantley out there. There's some Dylan in the doc too, some rookie Dylan out there, and it was fascinating to see how they sort of appreciated him, but also like, yeah, we're not like, we're a young team, we're not gonna be good. And there's an amazing story about Jaren, which I still remember. The amazing kind of the first moment that he really hit was that Brooklyn game where he hit some shots and he had a 4-point play to tie it, and then we won in overtime, and then a later game where he hit a three to win it, Lakers. But it was funny hearing that after the Brooklyn game that Mike Conley was saying that he was going back in the locker room ready to get excited and throw water on each other, and Marc Gasol had kicked over a trash can and was screaming because they didn't play the right way, even though they won, it didn't matter. And so there's like that, it's both, I love him, and it's also like, you know, pick your moments. But he definitely, it's actually surprising now that he's like a coach and like owns a team, and I wonder how they deal with that, if he's better than when he was a player. But I love that. And I thought it was just great that they got some of the old footage from draft rooms. Hopefully there's more of that stuff that people can resurface, because, you know, honestly, one of the big things that I took away was a couple of the narratives that have just been, I think, just known. And one of the big narratives to me was Pau Gasol wanting to be traded, asking to be traded, wanting out. And I think there is still some to that. I mean, like you said, it's going to be a pro Gasol documentary, but it seemed much more listening to the interviews that Pau really wanted to stay, and like literally Heisley and Chris Wallace just got in his way multiple times, and that they like didn't even tell him about the Lakers trade. And then seemingly apparently Chris Wallace joked because they hadn't been able to get Mark, but then he joked about the irony of they're trading him to LA, but they're getting Mark back. And Pau Gasol kind of basically being like, I didn't find that ironic or amusing at all.
Well, yeah, it's like the one thing that he wanted to do was play with his brother, and then Wallace is like, ha ha, you know, like party favor.
It's like they wouldn't give up $500,000 to bring Mark over, which is crazy. But then, you know, the only way they would get him over is they gave away like his all-star brother to a team. And so it's just so interesting how all that works. And so I just thought that was an interesting narrative, because I think at the time here in Memphis, I mean, a lot of maybe our younger listeners won't remember as much, but I mean, it was pretty anti-Gasol. I know Chris Vernon was definitely ready to get Gasol out. And I thought that helped kind of remind us what Pau did, took us to the playoffs, and, you know, his character and all those sorts of things, and how it did reshape in a way that I felt like gave a better view of things than just kind of this like Gasol basically got annoyed with Memphis and wanted to leave Memphis. It didn't seem like that at all. So
agreed. I was definitely a Powell hater, but it was also just a function of the third time around. It's like fool me once, fool me twice type thing, where yeah, if you go 0-4 twice, but then it happens yet again, you're just kind of like, we just need to change something. And so yeah, it really is striking me in this conversation too, that Mark will continue to have kind of an impact. He was here at the very beginning when Pau came to Memphis. So he's been, and then he played on the team with Jaren. And so truly until Jaren retires, Mark is here in a way, and yeah, almost the longest tenured and longest impacting Grizzly of all time. And so I did think that this was, it just illuminated that to me.
Yeah.
And, in a real way.
And I think, you know, Michael Blevins mentioned it in the panel thing too, that, you know, Gasol, you know, when Ja came back, Gasol, you know, tweeted out a picture, Instagram with him wearing the Jaw ones, and how he said throughout the entire interview process, and every time he talked to Mark, he was always talking about we and us. And it was, and he always thought he was like confused because he was like thinking back to the team. And then he realized, no, when Mark says we and us, he's talking about the present team. Like he's talking about Bane and Jaw and Jaren, and that's who he was talking about because he sees that as his team. And so I think that's really good to see. I know obviously he loves Spain and he owns a team over there. But man, you know, I wish that, you know, I love that Zeebo and Tony have been around a lot. I hope that there's a way, especially now after retiring his number, that he's around a little bit more, because I think it'd be great. I know obviously Santi Aldama has loved the fact that Gasol has a history with us. And so anyway, I just would love to see him more around now that he's sort of fully retired. Hopefully we bring him back a little bit more.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I mean, as a personal anecdote, I can say that Marc Gasol is a really big fan of Grizzlies history. He's liking those posts left and right. And it's funny because most of the time it has nothing to do with him. It's just like he finds something, you know, fun and interesting. And it's usually a different player that's, you know, highlighted in the post. So it's fun. Yeah. Any other thoughts about the doc before we move on?
No, I mean, I didn't think they pulled punches a little bit with Fizdale. I think it's becoming clearer and clearer as we get like Tony Allen in interviews and other things what you were saying earlier, and that he definitely did the moving too fast. And, you know, it's just funny as a fan, cause you sit there and you listen and they talk about, like Zeebo going to the bench and things like that. And you're just like, okay, but you know, it's okay. It's okay. And you just, you know, it's so naive about the culture of the team and how that wasn't just Zeebo being mad and not wanting to get a six-man trophy of the year, but it was about, but Mark, that was a huge deal to Mark. That was a huge deal to Tony. They did not like that at all. So just interesting, interesting little feel. I just think there's a lot of stuff like that in the doc. So it was just really fun.
Yeah. I can't also not think of Chandler Parsons when I think about Fizdale. Yeah.
That's the real trigger warning, not Dylan Brooks.
Right. Yeah, no. It's true. Really. That's watching the one shot of Parsons like three that doesn't even graze the net barely. It's just crazy.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, it's the thing. That's like when we look back on that time, it'll always be a beloved time, but yeah, it's sad. It was the core four. And we needed a fifth, and we could never find that fifth. Or, you know, if we had like a Shane Battier, he only was there for a little while. We could just never really find that fifth player who could really put us over the top with our core four. So,
well, we went 20 minutes without mentioning Brandon Clark, who has officially returned, and he has played now in three games, 33% from three. Brandon Clark, one for one tonight against the Pistons.
On huge volume, right?
Yeah, huge volume. But it was great to see. I was at the Lakers game when he came back, and obviously standing ovation from the crowd was, you know, didn't get a thunderous dunk or anything like that, but just did what Brandon Clark does, which is getting rebounds he's not supposed to get, hustling, just doing all the dirty work, and that's what he's been. And you can tell that they took their time ramping him up because he does seem to be playing plenty of minutes. I mean, I really did think he was going to be in the teens for his minutes, and he came out and played, I think it was like 21 or 22 in the Lakers game, and, you know, played a lot tonight against the Pistons, had a great second half, and just made all the plays that keep winning alive. And so shout out to Brandon. It is great to see a cameo. I mean, I doubt we'll see him in a back-to-back this weekend, which is totally fine. But overall, just, I mean, you know that this also does a ton for his confidence as he prepares this summer to get back to normal. And even if it's, even if we only get to, let's say, 85% of what he was athletically pre this season and last season, then it's still a really good player, and he's showing that he can hang. I just haven't noticed a huge drop off necessarily in his production and athleticism. What have you seen?
Yeah, no, I mean, like tonight, 7 of 12 from the field, 7 rebounds, doing that in 23 minutes. And honestly, he had a few more rebounds that I think, like, we'll see, because what you said, I mean, the one thing is he is not as explosive as he was. And, you know, the team and everybody has been saying this is just about getting his win back. That Harrington made mention of the fact that that when you look at his calves, the calf where the Achilles tendon was, you know, was ruptured is like definitely less defined than the other calf. And he assumes that a summer of full workouts, that will be back. And so that's, you know, that explosion, that, but the feel, the, you know, the little floaters, the when to jump, like the intuition about rebounds, just a little hustle plays. He was doing that. He looked the best he's looked tonight for sure against the Pistons. And like I said, 7 for 12, 7 rebounds, exactly what you want to see. He's not dunking over people, but he is laying it up. He is moving pretty well. He is still very fast down the floor, runs it well. So I'm, you know, so I remember, 14 months ago on this podcast, we came away, and of course we talked more. We did the Jaw podcast because that happened the same night, was Jaw at the club. But then we came back in the weekend and talked about Brandon Clark. And I remember us both saying, this could be the last time we see Clark in a uniform. Like, we have no idea because of the Achilles. So, I mean, to me, I'm over the moon that he looks like he will be in the rotation next year, no matter what. You know, whether he is a key, like he closes games in the playoffs, is really about what you're saying, that can we get close to 100% that athleticism back. But everything else is good. And man, him and Jaren in the lineup, even us being bad and having some not great players playing with them, that it's still a pretty devastating lineup. Like tonight, the Pistons scored a lot of points on us, and then the fourth quarter, they didn't score when Brandon and Jaren were out there, basically. I mean, so really good to see. I can't, you know, that was my second place who's up for sure, is Brandon Clark. So I was really excited about it.
What this really opens up to me is the conversation around what we should do on draft night, because if you look at how much Jaren has played at the five over the course of these last 20 games, and then you have Brandon Clark, who is showing signs of life here, and I mean, you could theoretically see a starting lineup, even if, let's say, we draft a center, like a more, I would say, bruising type center. You could see Brandon Clark starting opening night. I mean, he's always been a guy to me who just comes in and brings energy off the bench. Like, I just always kind of, he and Tyus in my mind were kind of the two that to me anchored those bench lineups for, you know, two plus seasons. And at the same time, you look at the way that he complements Jaren and the role that he is, you know, taking up on the floor. And I don't think it's crazy to see that be a potential starting lineup, especially if you have a guy like Vince Williams, who is also a plus rebounder and defender. We'll see how the summer goes and what the Grizzlies end up doing. But I just think it's worth saying now, because we could absolutely look up in October and that's our opening night starting front court. So just a little preview.
No, yeah. And I think, you know, it's been interesting for us that just as Grizzlies fans in general, you know, I was looking and I'm laughing because I think we have been obsessed. Like, if local media, just talking to Grizzlies fans, we're kind of obsessed with the big. And there actually are a couple bigs, and we can talk about that in a minute. A couple bigs that I do have liked that I've seen, or at least one particular big that I would be like very fine if we came away from the draft. Maybe another one. But for me, I think that it is wide open, and that I think we still need to be in kind of best player available if we, you know, or trade down or trade up type mode. And I think, you know, I mean, as much as I hate on them, they're really good. I think the Thunder are changing the narrative a little bit. I think, honestly, when you look at, like, if you look at the top 10 net rating teams, there's only a couple teams, you know, and obviously the Knicks being the big one, that are like elite rebounding teams. And obviously we were that in the past. But being an elite rebounding team is not as important as being a really good effective field goal percentage team. And so, like, if we can have a bunch of guys who score and shoot, that is much more important than getting rebounds. Because guess what? If you shoot well and score, you don't really need to get a lot of offensive rebounds. And I think we've shown, you know, some teams have shown, hey, we're not in the top 10, even in defensive rebounding, we're still elite defenses. So I say that to just say, Grizzlies fans, we have, one of the things is we've never been, if you look at our history, we've never been in the top 10 of effective field goal percentage ever. But I think maybe one team, like, you know, like maybe one of the Hubie teams might've been close to that, but we've always been a really good rebounding team. And obviously the team we just talked about, we've been glowing about the Mark Gasol documentary, you know, that this kind of pound team, with a bunch of good rebounders, even Gasol, I think, was a better rebounder than people give him credit for, but obviously Tony Allen was great. Zebo was obviously one of the best rebounders ever. And I just think we're really used to having a really good rebounding team. And I think that's what's going to be making, you know, what we could potentially go in next year, not rebounding, but that doesn't mean, that's not what we have to do to win. And I think it is going to be an interesting to see where we go and what we do. And I think Grizzlies fans need to be open-minded about us maybe playing more small, that maybe, even though maybe Jaren is better as a power forward, that, you know, we might just be getting some minimum vet player to be a big center. And we don't necessarily need somebody who's going to play every single game or play heavy minutes as this kind of bruising rebounder, you know, but we have a history. We've even had, you know, with Steven Adams, we had JV. We love rebounders in Memphis, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what we need going forward. And so, you know, with that, I've really liked Klingon in the, obviously he's kind of the most hyped guy. I don't know now if he'll be there around 7 or 8, which is where we might be drafting. He might get, you know, because I think UConn's pretty heavy favorites to win the tournament. He might have two more good games and people get really excited about him and him move up the boards a little bit. Because I think he is sort of, I mean, all of his comps are Steven Adams to a T. So in that sense, I really like him. At the same time, you know, I know Matt Hardlicka, friend of the pod, who's interviewed with us, he really prizes shooting. He's kind of even more on this bandwagon than I am, which is basically like, we're never going to be a true title contender unless we can put four guys out on the floor that shoot with jaw. And that's another thing to think about. And so that's, you know, the Filipowski comp, which is the Duke player who's tall, who's not as big and tough, but who shoots threes. Now, a lot of people would say he's just sort of like a younger, less skilled Santi Aldama. Why are we drafting somebody like that? Which I see as well. But that's kind of, you know, that's sort of the thoughts that I think we should be more open-minded than just, oh, we need bigs. That's our big need this summer. I don't necessarily think so. And I think Brandon Clark's good play has shown that we may not need a bunch of bigs and we might be better playing small, kind of like what the Thunder have done, you know, all season. We'll see how it works in the playoffs. But obviously the Thunder are fighting for a one seed right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at a team, which I don't necessarily equate Grizzlies to, we don't need to aspire to be this team, but I mean, Houston comes to mind, OKC comes to mind, where they're not drafting necessarily, or they weren't drafting for need more than they were just talent. And you look down the line at the amount of young wings that both of those teams have on their rosters. And I'm not saying that, again, we're a little bit farther along, especially financially, than them. And we have a lot less flexibility than they had at the time. But you can never have enough of those wings. And so if we end up going into the draft and we don't come away with a center, I think you're going to see a lot of fans, like you said, who are just going to question it because that's the obvious quote-unquote gap on the team. But look what, you know, the Rockets just did. They just went out and got Steven Adams, and he's going to probably be a stopgap solution for them next season. And we'll see how it looks. But all that said, like, centers are really probably the least difficult position to acquire via trade. and maybe point guard is up there too. But just there's always an opportunity to bring in a guy like that. And so, and you look at a team like us who are ready to win right now, there's no guarantee that a rookie would help that. And so why not take a swing on who you think the best talent is? And I, while we've had a project that looks to be a bust in the past and Zaire Williams, I think that we're going to, with another high pick, I just think that we've learned, we know what we have now. And we also have the stopgap of, not stopgap, but we have the backstop of GG and Vince. As you know, if this whatever draft pick we end up with doesn't work out, we still have a pretty good rotation and can go out and potentially find more on the trade market, because that's how Kleiman's done his business in the past. So I'm not too concerned right now with the draft and needing to go out and get a big.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, this has been a disaster season. We are still borderline a top 10 defense. You know, I mean, like if we were to probably play more of a few more of our guys, not kind of give some people more rope, we would probably get in the top 10 by the end of the season with all of the craziness. And that tells me that Jaren's awesome, that that Jenkins is a great defensive coach, but we're 30th in offense and we're like so 30th. It's really bad. And so to me, as much as people want bigs and a bruiser, we need scoring. And I guess we are so used to not shooting well that everybody wants people to get rebounds to put back. But I'd like to be a really good scoring team. Like, I'd like to shoot well for once. I think the Grizzlies can do that. So I don't know what that does. And like I said, Klingon is not, he's not a shooter. You know, Ty and I were getting excited about, he shot 1-3 as the shot clock expired the other day, and didn't look terrible. Like, it looked more like a Brook Lopez type shot. And so, you know, we were getting hopeful, but he's going to be more of a Steven Adams most likely. And not to say, you know, obviously we showed we can win well with Steven Adams, but at the same time, we also showed that Steven Adams, certain matchups, he can't play. And so all that said is just be open-minded, but I look forward to seeing what we're going to do. And I think I agree with you that I think we've learned from possibly some mistakes we made in the past too.
One last note before we get to our remaining schedule here. We did receive a report from Sam Hardiman with the Daily Memphian last week. And basically the state legislature had passed, it was a committee specifically that passed a reallocation of funds. And it was the hotel motel tax that had been going primarily to Memphis Tourism, who's also been in the news recently, and that would be reallocated to the FedEx Forum project. And there are those who say that this could be the key to bridging the gap between what already has been committed to the project and what is needed by the team to renovate FedEx Forum. It still has to pass a couple of state government, I guess you could say more specific entities on the government level, but it cleared a big hurdle. And I would say that things are looking really good for it, especially because you have the cooperation of the local entities that aren't necessarily going to be have access to that funding for the time being anymore. And so this was a really, for those that have been following this story, this is a really big deal, not only for the stadium itself as far as a construction project, but more that this gives, this essentially guarantees that the Grizzlies are going to sign a new lease and be here for at least another 30 years, which of course is the reason why we are worrying about this as much as we are. Obviously, FedEx Forum needs a facelift, but the more important thing is just the commitment by Robert Pera and the rest of the group to plant roots and have them grow here in Memphis. And honestly, it's just watching going back to the Mark Doc again, just it would be at this point that the Grizzlies are Memphis and Memphis is the Grizzlies. And so it would be weird if it wasn't that way. And so I'm glad that this small bit of news could have a trickle down effect to that big of an impact. So that was something I think worth mentioning on the update.
Yeah, no, I was excited to hear it. The least roadblocks in the way possible. I do think there's still, it sounded like, you know, listening to Hardman, he did a couple radio interviews saying that really honestly right now the money issue is less, is the less pressing issue. I think pretty much people are very confident about it. Now there's a little more like the Grizzlies are wanting to see sort of Memphis commit more to a more vibrant Beale Street downtown, that kind of, I think, asking a lot of local business people and others to kind of get involved, and the mayor just want to see a strong commitment to the downtown scene, that they care about that. And I think that's like kind of a minor thing, but that seems, honestly, that seems to be the only like sort of complaint at all that they have. And I feel like that's just them using their pressure, you know, because I don't think there's anybody who would be against a more vibrant downtown and a vibrant Beale Street and all those sorts of things. So
the remaining schedule here: at Bucks on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Then we have a back-to-back Pistons and Sixers. Of course, the Sixers Saturday night game is the Marc Gasol jersey retirement. Then we have four more games after that. Spurs at home Tuesday after this weekend. At Cavs, which will be the final away game. And then we finish out the season with a Friday-Sunday. Friday against the Lakers. Sunday, 2:30 p.m. That's Sunday the 14th against the Denver Nuggets, who have already locked up playoffs. We'll see.
The annual Kenny Lofton Jr. game.
Yeah.
We should start calling that the last. You know, it'll be interesting to see if there is a little bit. I mean, I think by then the Nuggets, OKC, Minnesota sort of fight for the one seed will probably be solved. But it'll be interesting to see if it's not. But yeah, that could be a rough game. LA game will be different. You know, I mean, it could be the Lakers are in. I think the Lakers won't have anything locked up as far as, I think it'll be really tight. So it'll be interesting to see, like, that we might actually have later games. But so hopefully the Spurs, hopefully Wimby will play. That's like a big hope for me. I know Spurs just released that they're sitting Sochan and Vonleh for the rest of the season. And, you know, it was funny, like ankle injury for Sochan. I'm like, I don't even remember Sochan getting an ankle injury, but whatever. But yeah, so hopefully Wimby won't have sat down, even though he will have gotten his 65 games in. So we'll see. But that could be a fun game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm just hoping for as many players to travel to Memphis as possible to close it out, because when we previewed the schedule initially, thinking that this stretch was going to be really important for playoff seeding, I was looking at, you know, the last six games, getting five out of the six at home. And yeah. Now it doesn't matter quite as much, but they've tried their best.
Plus we're a good road team.
We suck
at home.
Exactly. So
we did forget to mention one note, news and notes item that I know you really cared about, which is that the team officially shut down Zaire Williams and Derrick Rose for the season. Just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. I know, Will, you were very upset about that news.
Yeah, absolutely. Just devastated, honestly. You know, Derrick Rose and Zaire are what I think of when I think to the first 2 to 3 months of this season and how miserable it was to watch. And now I feel like the second half of the season, once we got a little bit more, I guess you could say we went through the stages of grief and we're all in acceptance, and also the excitement of just discovering the two wings that were playing behind Zaire the whole time. And even Scottie Pippen as a potential backup, even though Derrick Rose is still signed on the roster for next season. So yeah, terrible news to see that they're officially not going to be in the last, you know, eight games of the season or whatever it is at this point. So yeah, super bummed for them. All right, to close out the pod, let's get to MVP of the week. I believe I went first last time, so I'll let you go first this time, Kraft.
Yeah, I'll go. I mean, it's kind of stealing your who's up, but I'm going to give Jaren the MVP. I'm honestly, the first half of tonight, I almost texted some people, you know, maybe we should just shut Jaren down, just because he just looked frustrated, and he also looked like he had one foot maybe in some spring vacation. But then I don't know if somebody said something to him. I know people were talking trash to Kennard, but man, he came out, you know, had a 21-point third quarter, scored 40 tonight. And then honestly played DPOY type defense in that fourth quarter to really shut the Pistons down. And so to me, he hasn't been amazing the last couple weeks, but I'm giving the MVP just for, he plays every night. Like he's the one guy I always am super shocked at the couple times that he's been on the very, very long injury list that he comes out there and he plays and he, you know, I don't know if he gives it his all, but he gives a lot and you know, he's trying to work on his game. And so I appreciate that. So he's my MVP.
Same for me, Jaren Jackson, 40 piece tonight. And yeah, like you said, just has stayed committed and it paid off. And I think that his development this year has been really, really important for the long term. And so it's not a lost season for everyone. But right. Yeah, that'll do it for us. We'll see what our schedule is going to be. We'll at least get another one out to you before we get to our big episode, which is of course to wrap up every season. We do the Denny Awards, which will be super interesting and fun this year to go back and look at this year. And we'll also be staying in touch no matter what, just to get our pulse on the playoffs and what's going on there as it relates to the Grizzlies.
And that debate we talked about earlier with kind of like, you know, we'll be watching OKC. Do you need like a big center to be able to compete in the playoffs? And a lot of those kind of things as we think about the directions Grizzlies will go. So I think that'll be fun to watch the playoffs and talk about them from a Grizz angle.
Absolutely. So thanks for joining us this season as it comes to a close. Again, still a little bit more time, but we always appreciate you for listening and we will be back with you soon. Until then, we'll talk to you next week, Den. Thanks.